Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 198, which is almost cool. There's a joke that I'm priming for next time. Keep you on the edge of your seat. You'll pay for the whole ticket, or your ticket will buy the whole seat, but you'll only need the edge, brother.
Does that have to do with 198 or 199?
It's a teaser because I have a good one for 199.
Is 198 not a rear spacing?
197 was.
We missed that one, man. That was a fat bike one, right?
It was.
Jeez. Yeah. The bummer part is pretty much every show's number is a wheel spacing.
Or a shock eye to eye. So real quick, what I've been doing, I solved the question I had about bike bags. I found one. A Tour Divide rider came in and they had this really big top tube bag, and I asked them about it, and turns out it was extremely affordable and sold through Amazon. So I'm going to do a little click clacking here because it has a really funny name.
By the way, we might need to... You may be on your laptop microphone.
Mm-mm. Nope. Oh, I bet I am in the Google meeting still.
I checked it
on my recording.
Yeah, well, that's fine then.
What, me?
It's just when you were typing, it was extraordinarily loud, as if it was a microphone connected to your keyboard.
I bet I sound a little better, and you can't hear that typing, can you?
Oh, yeah, there we
Not
go.
Not as bad.
Yeah, yeah.
All righty. Sorry. All right, so this Bad Larry is called the Rhino Walk. That's the brand. And I'm going to give it an endorsement. I haven't ridden it yet, but the guy that I saw with it, he had already put like at least 1,000 miles on his. And I mean, I watched him unzip his zippers with no problem. And yeah, it's a big 2-liter honker, and it was like under $40. So, and I'm not knocking any of the nicer stuff out there. This definitely is not nice, I think is the best way to put it. It's definitely an entry-level piece, you know, dip your toe in the water. But just looking on what they have available on their like Amazon store, they've got a bunch of different styles of handlebar bags. They have more handlebar bags. They've got, wow, I'm just in handlebar bags. And then they do a bunch of panniers. They have a bunch of options, and I don't want to say that this is going to be as good as anything.
Isn't paneer the Indian cheese?
Panniers?
There you go.
Whatever. What? The fucking saddlebags, man.
The side baggies.
Yeah. It looks like they have some really affordable moto travel luggage. Like, I don't want anyone to think this stuff is going to last a long time, but if you're just dipping your toe in the water, then I think this is probably a good way to go, because, you know, you don't want to buy like a $500 bike packing kit and then use it once. You know, that's going to be a bummer.
What's the brand again?
Rhino Walk.
How do you spell Rhino? Is it like Y or something dumb?
Nope. Just like the animal.
H-I-N-O-W-A-L-K. Okay.
No spaces.
Rhino Walk. Oh, wow. They do make a lot of shit.
Yeah. So.
And it's not like the stuff is $1. Like some of this moto bags, they're $260 a piece kind of thing. So
yeah, but it's not a, you know, Tusk performance like $400 setup, you know.
Well, Tusk is some pretty basic stuff, but yes, I see what you're saying. Tusk is the house brand of Rocky Mountain.
That's right. What's the really fancy ones? Obviously
Krieg and or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you can spend as much as you want on anything, but like, they have a 45-liter moto dry bag with straps and stuff for $50.
Yeah, that's, you know, wild.
Probably wouldn't put family heirlooms in there, but if you're just like strapping some stuff on to do a, you know, big dumb ride with some friends and you probably won't use it again until maybe next year, then that's probably fine. You know, you probably don't want to buy this if you're trying to ride from Alaska to the tip of South America, but if you're just going to like buzz around in your own state or, you know, 400 mile radius 1 week, it's probably going to be fine.
It's pretty wild when you think about companies like this. I think we should get into this tangent for just a second. I don't know where the right answer is, on one hand, when you have a company like this who, you know, who knows who's actually behind it? Who knows what kind of customer support they have? Who knows where they're made and how horrible it is and all that kind of stuff? But from just a product standpoint, man, it's pretty hard to argue with this kind of stuff. And I think this can creep into the more mainstream bike world, right? Like, should we be scared of this stuff? Is this stuff amazing? I don't know what to think about it. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I think you could easily go either direction with this. You know, I don't think I would buy Rhino Walk brake pads. I don't think I would buy Rhino Walk hydraulic hoses for my brake system, but
yeah, like bags and clothing, kind of soft good type stuff. Whew. I think some of these brands got to watch out, because at the end of the day, they still need to do the correct things. It needs to, you know, last a reasonable amount of time. It needs to be the things that people are asking for, have pockets and loops and hooks and things in the proper places. It can't just be a moron making stuff up. It has to be what a motorcyclist or a biker actually wants at the end of the day. But if they're able to do that stuff, man, like, why get the other stuff? But then I also get scared. Do we want to live in the world where it's just run by faceless companies on Amazon? I don't know, man. The world's a strange place.
I mean, there's always going to be a happy medium, right? But in this world of happy mediums, I mean, you brought up apparel. I bought some stuff from Black Bibs recently, and it's just a really plain, as in plain in terms of, like, you know, it doesn't have a ton of design on it. It's just understated, you know, not loud, and it's paper thin, and it was like $60. And I love Specialized, but the men's prime lightweight short sleeve jersey is $159.99.
Well, like, since that's we're on this little tangent, what about Specialized new $700 shoes, or are they $800? They're either $699 or $799.
That just came out, and I haven't looked at it, but
like, holy shit.
That's,
those cost $6 to make, $18 to make. I don't know. Holy balls. That's insane. That's all.
I mean, I'm not mad about it though. Like,
oh, here's the thing. People are going to, if you want the nicest of the nice, they can charge whatever they damn well please. And it's pretty crazy what people will buy.
Oh, bummer. I was just about to order a set, but they don't come in my size. They only do 39 through 46, and I'm a 47. Bummer. They're really light.
Yeah.
Rimco's got a really nice haircut in his ad for it, so.
You know what's even lighter is you could probably get some SPDs surgically attached to the bottom of your feet, and then you don't have to wear shoes.
I was going to go the other direction and say, take one of your pairs of shoes and then start cutting out sections of material and gluing in little pieces of sail material. I bet you could cut a lot of weight out of a pair of shoes.
Yeah, I think we're working our way back towards those SPD sandals that came out.
Oh, dude, I need a pair of those so bad. let's see, SPD sandal. You know, for when you're going to be in the river at 4, but test riding or when you want to ride to the river and jump in. God, these things are so fashionable.
Yeah, when you want to ride some rocks and possibly get some toes amputated.
Dude, what more could a man need than to lose a toe on a rock? I mean,
I've banged my moto boots into some shit real hard to the point where I almost want to walk around in normal life in moto boots.
I'm going to turn this into a segue. So, no bikes this week. I went out and did my first surfing this week ever. Never surfed in the ocean, never surfed in a river, not really spent much time on a river.
There's no oceans touching Colorado, right?
No, but there's airplanes that leave from Colorado and Memphis, where I used to live.
Oh. So you're just like doing all kinds of crazy shit. You're like flying to Memphis and doing shit there and then flying to other states and doing stuff there?
No. I'm saying I've never done any surfing at all, and I did my first river surfing this
week. River? I thought you were going to say that you just like hopped on a plane and went to Cali or something.
No. There's a surf wave a third to half mile from the shop, and we are a surfboard dealer, and one of the guys is super into it. Like,
how does that work? Is that like a mechanical thing that they install in the river that just like makes some shit, or is it just a naturally wavy section?
It is. it was a project of, it was a man-made project that actually got worked over twice to be where it is today, where people love it.
And is it so, fully, yeah. is it fully like on its own, or is it actually part of a river?
So it's in the river. And part of that is there is a go-around channel. You know, like if you're in a boat and you're a fisherman, you're not going to go through the surf wave.
Got it.
If you are in a boat hooting and hollering with your friends, you might go through the surf wave. Like it is a overwhelming majority of the river is the wave portion, and the go-around is, you know, two boats wide.
Oh, so you could like accidentally get hit by a bass boat when you're out there surfing.
It is illegal to run a power boat in the Arkansas River. So it would be, you know, either an inflatable kayak and a hard kayak, or probably an inflatable boat.
Ooh, are there
14,
like
16 foot?
Are there little e-boats? Are there electric? No, are they electrically assisted boats? Are those okay?
No motors allowed.
Oh man, I was trying to tie that into e-motos. Or sorry, e-mountain bikes, if you didn't catch that.
I did, but so did my first stint on the surfboard. At the time, didn't have a wetsuit, so it was pretty time limited in terms of, you know, we did this after work, so there's not direct sunlight, and I'm wearing a PFD and a pair of board shorts, and everyone else is in either a wet or dry suit. So I only took a couple of turns and did okay. I never went across the wave, but I did get to stand up unassisted for more than a quarter of a second by myself. So that was pretty good. And then I picked up a used wetsuit and used like sleek PFD. So that's super cool. And then let's see, finally got a dropper for my Canyon. So that's going to go in soon. I was going to do a big ride tomorrow, but I got someone wanting to come check out the Rover. So I'm kind of in a scramble to get that cleaned up and tidied up and, you know, presentable and ready for sale. And it's just a bunch of little dumb stuff like cleaning and, you know, making sure this is tight and that is tight, you know, just and a bunch of stuff that I knew how to fix very easily, but hadn't done yet, like put this trim screw back in or, you know, put a new trim clip in here, whatever.
So does the engine run?
Oh, the truck runs, drives, everything's great. I'm buttoning up some cosmetics.
No. Well, like, I mean, that's pretty rare for a Rover, so you're already like ahead of the curve there. You're doing good.
Oh yeah, great runner, no rust. So yeah, I'm way ahead of the curve. And there was a dumb thing too, like when I bought it, it's so easy to install the turn signals, like the turn signal lights in this truck, and at some point someone had taped one on because, you know, they didn't have a Phillips head screw, the single Phillips head screw that holds the light in, and I finally like cleaned all the tape residue off of it. I just didn't care. Spent so much time getting it together and running that I saw that and I was just like, that might hit a tree. And I didn't mess with it until today. But before today, that was the later part of today. Yesterday, I went down a section of the river in a boat, one of those big inflatables. Never done that before. And I promise I'm tying this into Moto Boots, which is we stopped and went to check out something that you can see from the highway that I had never been to. There's an old kiln, and it was pretty cool to go there. And turns out there is an arch not far from there that you can see from the river or the highway if you know what you're looking for. I say small, like you might be able to fit, like you could definitely put a four-wheeler through there, maybe a side-by-side, probably not a truck. And I was going to hike up there, but I was wearing Chacos, and me and my buddy were like, we got to come back down this. And I was like, man, I wish I had my moto boots right now, because the moto boots aren't the greatest for hiking, but trials boots, my God, they are just stiff in all the right places. And the sole is like marshmallow soft for insane traction. It's just amazing. So yeah, those are good. And going back to what Kenny said about bashing toes, I do on all of my shoes. You can see where my pinky toe belongs because I have definitely smashed it into rocks on the mountain bike. So keep that in mind. Probably don't take SPD sandals on gnarly single track.
That is good advice.
Let's see. And then what else have I been doing? Shot a new rifle today. So got a new rifle, picked that up this week, and was able to get it all rough sighted in. No need to perfectly sight it in. We're going to change that a little bit, adding the suppressor that has been applied for, just to processing time with the good old ATF. So there's that.
Are you doing that? It's just out of curiosity, is that, and you don't have to say if you're like worried about it, is that thing going to be registered to you or to a trust?
To me.
Gotcha.
I understand the trust stuff. I just think that would be something to worry about in the future.
Sure. I think it becomes a bigger problem if you have like a bunch of NFA stuff, then yeah, that might be wise. But yeah, if you've got one or two things, is it worth it? Probably not.
Yeah. I mean,
so what did you get?
I'll be quite honest. I don't remember.
So you just walked in. You walked into the gun place and you're like, hey, my name is Matt. I want a new rifle. And they're like, okay. And then you walked in and picked it up.
Oh, no. It was much different than that. Andrea walked in and was like, Matt's hunting rifle sucks and he has to have a nicer one, but he's too cheap. And she picked out a rifle, a Tika 2, picked out a Swarovski optic and some scope rings. And swiped her credit card.
Well, that's pretty cool. So Tikas are neat.
Yeah, she has one. So mine is just essentially, it's the same gun as her. She just swapped to a different stock. It's a folding stock that's super adjustable because, you know, I'm a normal size dude and guns are made for people my size. And she's not a normal size person. You know, she's not the average demographic for a rifle.
Sure,
so
sure.
She got a different stock.
Okay.
It fits her great. So,
very cool.
You know, and I, for her, the folder makes a lot of sense because, you know, if you can imagine from the top of her shoulder to her butt is a lot shorter than mine. So,
well, she's also doing, yeah, like a ridiculous amount of hiking and stuff with it, right?
Well, I mean, I'm going to be doing similar types of stuff.
Oh, okay.
Like when she crosses a down tree, like the butt of this rifle hangs lower than mine will because, you know, she didn't have a folding stock, for argument's sake, like from her shoulder to the bottom of her butt is much shorter than from the top of my shoulder to the bottom of her butt. So her rifle would like bang and catch on more stuff. And I'm just not going to, and I won't be doing the same level or frequency of bushwhacking that she does, but you know, we hunt the same zones. It's all going to be, you know, it's not park your truck and walk 200 yards to a stand and sit down. That's not our hunting style.
What is it primarily for? Like elk, deer?
Elk and deer, you know, it'll take down any big game in Colorado that I will ever be able to hunt. You know, I don't apply for moose points. I'll never be able to moose hunt. I just don't care. It's a very long and arduous process. You know, it's probably going to, by the time points creep and stuff comes in, I probably wouldn't be able, if I started now, probably couldn't hunt moose before 70, I'm guessing, which is a long time.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, it takes on average 25 points and you only get 1 point a year, but the reason that there's this thing called points creep is, you know, there's people that are buying, because you don't have to apply for a moose tag. You can apply for a moose preference point or an elk or a deer preference point, and that's like $8. So there's people that start applying for moose points for their kids when they're like 8. So, you know, it's just going to, more people are going to have more points as time moves forward.
Makes sense.
But yeah, I mean, I enjoy hunting, but I'm not quite to the same degree of Andrea, so for me, it's going to be, you know, yearly, the gun will probably be used less than, let's call it 3 weeks if you look at cumulative time, and it'll be something that hopefully I use to ethically harvest wild game to consume and enjoy. All right, Kenny, your turn.
All right, what have I been up to?
Oh, wait a minute. I got a pistol today, or yesterday, too. Sorry, I got a Glock yesterday, too. I forgot to mention that.
Oh, okay, so you went into the gun store, and you're like, hey, my name's Matt. I need two guns. And then later, that's what you ended up with?
Well, Andrew went into the gun store and was like, Matt needs this rifle. And then I looked on their website, and I'm like, I kind of need a 9mm. So I looked at their used guns, and I called them. I'm like, hey, because you can buy one or a gajillion guns on one background check, and you pay the fee for the background check for every transaction. So I just added a pistol into that transaction. I got a, you know, just a used $300 pistol, and I didn't make it a $314.75 pistol by doing it on a separate transaction. So
yeah. Are you, what'd you get?
Glock 26.
Okay.
So subcompact, it came with two magazines. One's a 10 round and one's an extended 12 round, which makes the gun fit my hand much better. With the 10 round, my pinky's off the grip, and with the 12 round, it's perfect. So
I'm sure people in other countries are horrified right now.
Then I just walked in and like bought a pistol all willy-nilly.
It is weird. It's a weird place that we live. Interesting stuff. Yeah. I mean, I've bought so many guns. I don't even, it's weird. I'm not even a gun person. It's just like, I don't know. It's just something that you do.
It's a very American thing.
It is very American thing to do. Yeah, so funny.
All right, Kenny, what'd you do this week?
I didn't buy any guns. Yeah.
Lame.
Yeah, I know, right? What a weird week for an American. I rode some moto. I explored what's called, I don't know what it's called. Actually, I'm making it up. It's called South Dell. It's where I've been riding the past couple weeks. I usually like to do that. I'll go find one place and then like I have all these ideas. Like, yeah, oh, there's this road here. I want to see where that goes. And you kind of get a vibe for what's out there. Just like last year, I talked about how much I rode off of Highway 6 because there's so many places. So this is kind of concluding my Dell exploration. There's definitely places I haven't been in that area, but I've seen a lot of it now. And I went to the south section, which is where I went wheeling before. And yeah, it wasn't that amazing for moto. It was still pretty fun and pretty scenic. I had a good time. I made like a nice 60-mile loop or so. But I didn't realize that it's all, what do they call it? Wild something or other. Why is the name escaping me now?
Wilderness area?
Wilderness area. That's the W I was looking for. I just didn't realize that. So there's some like established roads that I guess are kind of grandfathered in. So I rode kind of around the perimeter of this whole mountain range, which was pretty cool. I got to see an incinerator, which is pretty cool. It's just an industrial looking place where I guess they're burning shit. I don't know. It seemed relatively clean as far as what was coming out, but who knows? Just a random thing.
You always had
that
third eyeball, right?
So I rode by an incinerator. But it's a neat area. I just wish there was more moto and single track stuff. I did find some stuff off of a road that was probably not legal trail. It didn't say anything, but it was probably put in by some enduro bros. And I got pretty deep in there, saw another rattlesnake, and decided that maybe I should. Rattlesnakes are usually my indicator that I'm in a place where I really don't need to be by myself on a moto. So I decided to turn around. Plus, it was getting full the hard enduro. I probably rode, I don't know, 3 or 4 miles on some pretty bushwhacky single track, pretty much up a creek bed. And I'm on the Husky 350, my little bit bigger bike, and I'm by myself, and I'm on a worn out 50-50 rear tire.
Come on, dude.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I'm getting more confident on it. Like if I have to completely turn around, if I'm completely blocked in, I'm pretty confident getting that thing turned around these days. So...
So can you do a proper pivot turn in like 17 steps now?
No, not in one fell swoop. I'm not just like bop and then 180. But,
no, that's fine.
But if I need
even
to
be able to do it in like 4 or 5.
Yeah, but if there's like, imagine I'm in a slot canyon and I've got 2 45-degree banks. I can just kind of like bop, bop, bop. Maybe in like 3, 4, 5 little kind of movements, I can get myself turned around, usually just with 1 foot down.
Yeah, and especially if the side is like slanted, you can just angle up it at first, yeah, and then roll back a little and then maybe lift it or maybe just kind of let the front wheel up and slide down. Who cares?
Yeah, you know, but it's not in one fell swoop. It's not sexy. It's not trialsy, but I can get the job done. So anyway, I did some of that. I did have kind of the rest of the day planned. I was just in a cool area. I found a neat little place to park. It was not very windy, which is... can be a challenge if you've got like a little kind of day camping spot in Utah and you want to, you know, fire up a grill, for example. Finding a place that is not windy can be a challenge. And this place was just pretty still. And I brought my grill and my fridge and all kinds of stuff. And yeah, I forgot to bring my propane. So
no,
it wasn't that big a deal. Like I was only an hour out of town. It's not like I was 4 hours away or something. It's just, I just had to eat a couple snacks instead of like meat. I was going to chill out for an hour or two, just relax, have a couple beers, eat a burger, and just kind of like look at the stuff around you because you're in like a bunch of mountains and it's pretty cool. But my dumb ass packed everything except my little 1 pound propane bottle. So oopsie, lesson learned. What else have I been doing? No mountain biking, unfortunately. I really do need to mountain bike. I feel really bad. It's been so long since I've thrown my leg over that thing. Yeah. All right. That's all I got. Should we talk about new stuff? We've got quite a bit.
We should. I say we go, and I'm going to close that one. That one's not even interesting. I'm going to go in order from I'm going to rip the shit out of it and make fun of it in ways to things that might actually be cool, And you can interject and totally screw it up at any time. But Raceface is launching cash money wheel sets, so you can get another color of Kashima that won't match any of your other Kashima stuff on your bike.
I will say, as a shop, we carry a reasonable amount of the cash money stuff. I don't carry a lot of colors when it comes to Raceface, but those pedals and bars and some of the other stuff sell shockingly well.
Yeah, that's cool.
And I do. Right, I will say, as far as wheels go, I have a little spot in my heart for just polished aluminum wheels. Just polished silver. Something about them. Kind of cool. I kind of want a set.
You know, I think if I ever build another wheel set, I'm going to use silver spokes and silver nipples for sure.
Yeah, I think that would be fun. I think there's some cool stuff you could do. Obviously, you could do, I think that just a simple black hub, black rim, silver spokes could be cool. And then the flip-flop of that, right? If you do your polished, do some polished hubs and some black spokes, think that could be pretty cool. But not as cool as the other way.
You remember the wheels you built for me, right? Those were hot.
I don't remember. Which ones? I built a couple, maybe.
Well, you built me two wheel sets, yeah. You built me my first i9s, which were...
like on crests or something?
With black, with the OG... good crest.
Okay.
And then the other ones were those high polish, you know, power tap silver with silver spokes, silver nipples, and high polished hub, velocity rims.
Man, for some reason I don't remember those. I feel bad.
But I put those wheels on an aluminum CAD 10 that was black and green, and it just looked right.
We've talked about this a bunch. Green bikes, especially like the darker British Racing green bikes with just some chrome accents, to me, is still so classy.
Well, and going way back to my BMX days, I always thought adding some, you know, in that world, it would be chrome. But, like, silver is always a nice touch because, like, if you were to run a silver stem or something like that, you know, you're always going to have silver on your bike, whether it's brake banjo bolts or, you know, I mean, rotor bolts can be silver depending on what brand and level, you know, you're... there's always, like, your seat post collar bolt, your all this stuff, like, there's a good chance of it being silver. And then it just, like, it makes it tie into something that you don't normally notice, which I think is really cool.
All right, what else we got?
Feedback Airlift.
Yeah.
Feedback's new work stand, so you can use a tire pump to lift your heavy bike into the air.
And what's your feedback on that?
I see what you did there. I can't wait until someone hooks a compressor up to this bitch and launches a bike, like, into the ceiling.
I like the original specialized dropper seat
post.
The command post, yeah.
I saw a working command post this week or this month that had at least all the air in it. Like, I don't know how we're still living. I think every bit of air in the world was inside of that command post. It lifted the tire off the ground. Like, you could have put a small child on there and, like, yeeted them through the building.
I'm currently watching a video of this.
On the airlift?
Yeah, it's something. It's only a matter of time before someone brings in their feedback stand and is like, yo, can you do a rebuild on my feedback stand? The main air seal is leaking. Man.
Dude, I can't wait. It's going to be so good.
I'm watching it. That's interesting. It's a lot of steps, though. It's like, man, this is why people are going to make fun of e-bikers. Hang on, let me work my bike for a second. And you, like, do all this adjustment and, like, put this thing in the stand, but it's not off the ground yet. And they're like, hang on. And you go, if I use this, it would have to have, like, a Foompa hooked up to it or something. I would never use a floor pump like a poor person. Yeah, mine would definitely have a DeWalt battery zip tied to a leg with some compressor on it.
Yeah. Or you know what else you could do?
What's that?
Just blow your back out. I don't know.
Yeah, I get it. Bikes are getting heavier and heavier, especially if you work in a shop. It can be a pain in the ass, but also speed is a thing. If some of these stands are too fiddly and too slow, that's definitely an issue. I don't have any problems with my e-bikes because none of them weigh 50 pounds, but I could see 50 pounds is definitely kind of the ballpark where it starts to suck. But my Kinevo, for example, is 40, so... not a big deal.
I don't mind picking up like a Vado SL, you know, but I don't really want to pick up an alloy Levo.
Yeah, I don't want to pick up a Rambo double hub motor with racks on it that weighs 80 pounds.
No, I mean, I just flat out don't pick those up, but, you know, I don't sweat a Vado, and, like, I will pick up a Levo, but What I want to add to that is we have two separate stands in the shop, like two separate park electric stands. And then we have a double stand, like an old school, you know, just analog double stand, and a dedicated check-in stand. And the person that works on the one side of the check-in stand is a low stander. He likes his stand. I mean, he's not nearly as tall as me, and he likes his stand a little lower. So, you know, that's helpful because if he's not there, like if I'm putting a bike into a stand, it's generally one that's not as high as I would generally like it. So, you know, that's not as bad. And at home, same thing with Andrea. Like, and also our shop is not that tall. It probably only has a 7-foot ceiling at most. You just can't have the stand too high because one, she can't use it. And two, it'd be really hard to put the bike either, you know, rear wheel up or really any vertical position, you know, rear wheel or front wheel skyward. You run out of room, but, you know, even with the rear wheel off, you'd have like your derailleur banging into the rafters. So where I do pick up the heavier bikes isn't, you know, let's call it nipple high to me. It's a little lower.
Got it.
So I just don't like fancy brakes.
Speaking of hope stuff, somebody brought in a set of their crazy rotors. They're like fully ventilated, and I think they're 3.3 mil thick. It was ridiculous. Okay. They were so heavy. They weighed as much as a wheel. It was wild. I don't know.
Did they want you to ultrasonic clean them to get all the brake dust out of them?
I don't know what bike they were going on, to be honest. Someone just handed them to me and said, look at this. And I looked at them and I'm like, yeah, that's crazy. It looked like they were soldered together. It looked like a weird version of Ice Tech where there were two steel pieces that were soldered together. I couldn't tell what was in the middle. I kind of want to know what they are now. Hope rotors, brake discs, fixed, floating, vented. So maybe these vented V4. Let's see if this is what they are. Yeah, there you go. So it was a vented V4, 3.3 thick. Anyway.
How does that not just rub on the caliper body?
Those exist. I guess the V4 is a special thing. I don't know. Pretty crazy.
All right. Yeah, I already closed it. I don't have anything else to say about Hope. Hunt is releasing wheels with carbon spokes.
All right.
Thoughts?
Every Hunt wheel I've seen has been a problem. That's all I can say.
Okay.
I want people to try. I want there to be other brands and choices. But when someone rolls into my shop with some weird bougie brand of thing and they're like, I've lost a non-drive side end cap for my Hunt wheel. And I'm like, man, I can't do anything about that. And it makes me look bad. And it sucks.
Yeah.
All right. You want to talk about the Fox Podium Fork?
I guess.
It's like one of the bigger things to happen in a while. Is it actually good? Or cool, or worth the money, or weight, or anything. I don't know. We can discuss it.
I had a really busy day, so I haven't really, like, I'm breezing the article now. Yeah, I'm not really.
So here's how I will go over a few of the hit points here. It's got 36 stanchions. They're obviously very beefy, so I don't think it's probably going to have more stiffness than your average 36 fork. It's got 47 or something uppers. Granted, you can measure your lowers on a traditional fork, and they're probably in that ballpark. So does that really matter? I don't know. I guess you could argue that's the 47 is connected to your crown. So maybe you can get some extra crown stiffness that way. I don't really know. It's upside down. In theory, you have constantly lubricated seals, which is supposedly cool. It runs a 20 mil boost DH hub standard. So none of your wheels are going to work. That's a big problem. It's $2,000, which is a problem. And it weighs as much as a Fox 40, which is a problem. So if you don't care about money or weight or hub standards, supposedly it rides really nice. I have not ridden one yet. I will reserve judgment. If I'm feeling friggin' froggy, I might slap one on my Kinevo. We'll see. I have not been offered one for free or anything cool. This would be like with my own dollars. If Fox wants to shoot one by, I will definitely try it and or keep it. But I don't know. I'm curious about it. I want to give it a chance. But man, on paper, that weight and that price and the stupid axle thing, I'm sure they did it for a reason, without a doubt. Just like they had that predictive steering axle situation on the RS1. There's a reason why they're doing that. but $2,000. Just a lot of dollars. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't ride that hard. I think that's the only way to put it. And we could be wrong. In 10 years, everything could be inverted again. Who knows?
Maybe.
But I just don't.
I'll flip this a little bit. I think we were pretty early adopters of bigger chassis, shorter travel forks, because we realized, man, these are actually really good. Like, kind of who would have thought? But this is a way better thing. And clearly the entire world has obviously figured that out now. So a properly executed single crown upside down fork, could it be good? Maybe, but we've talked about it on previous episodes. I truly think upside down forks, the only time they're going to shine for the most part is when you have true dual crowns and you can keep that deflection to a minimum. And in this case, I think I just have a sneaking suspicion that all the numbers just don't quite work for a single crown upside down fork. I think what you end up with to make it work properly, I'll bet that they just can't make it lighter than this. That's just the limitation of what they're doing.
I mean, yeah, I know what you're saying. Like, inverted forks rule the big moto world, but for my trials bike, it is a standard. You know, it's not inverted on the trials bike. Did they do that to save weight? I don't know. It's much lighter than my KTM.
Yeah.
How much of that is the fork? How much of that is stanchion size? How much of that is everything? You know, but.
Because I think executed properly, you can have really good traditional forks. Imagine if you gave all the engineers today and there was no budget constraints. There's no one looking over their shoulder. There's no bean counter saying, don't do it. There's no marketing person saying everybody wants upside down forks because they're cool. I think if you had all of the big brains at KYB and Showa and all these moto places and said, hey, I want you guys to make the best performing reasonably, like maybe, hey, can you make it a half pound lighter than the current upside down forks? And can you make this the most plush, best performing motorcycle fork possible with all the latest damper technology? I'll bet you that fork would be fucking amazing. Guarantee it would be amazing. But for some reason, these upside down forks became popular in moto. I'm sure there's compelling reasons why. I'm sure there's some great historians and people that worked at Showa and KYB that would say why it happened. Hell, maybe it was just the marketing people that shoved it down their throat and they said, hey, make the best upside down fork possible. And they did. I don't know. But I guarantee you that if they had to make a modern era, traditional, not upside down moto fork, I guarantee it'd be amazing. Guarantee it.
Well, I'm doing some Googling here. And it says that the larger outer wall thickness attaching to the frame improves chassis stiffness and reduces unsprung weight.
Yeah. So that's a reasonable reason why they did it. But I still argue that using today's technology, because some of the best non-inverted forks from like the, I don't know, mid-90s, late 90s, they were pretty decent. And people did some damper upgrades and some cool stuff to them. And those things were like shockingly decent. So 20 more years of suspension tech, man, I think they can make them pretty good. Just saying. I think there's just a stigma there that people think you could never have a good traditional fork. But I think the trials world shows that you can absolutely have a fantastic fork that's traditional. And maybe tiny bit of that is how much travel is on that bike, 6 inches, 8?
To be honest, I don't know. And also, what does it hit? You know, a moto fork a moto fork has to rip through whoops and
yes.
smash into rocks in the desert, where a trials fork, the front wheel is, you know, generally speaking, is in it from, and I know that you're going to send me some video, don't fucking bother, but like, generally speaking, it's in a slow turning or unweighted scenario.
Very rarely, unless you're at the top of the top, you're not taking gigantic slams on those bikes. And when you watch those guys do these ridiculous things to flat, most of the time they're so good that their technique is so amazing, they're not smashing the fork into shit. They're taking most of it with their body and or like back wheel first, that kind of stuff.
Right. And what I was going to say, like, the hardest I've ever hit my front wheel is, imagine there is a 1 foot tall rock, a 2 foot gap, and then a 2 foot tall rock that is big enough for a moto to be on top of. The hardest that I've used my front wheel is, it's a second gear move where you cruise in and like a wheel length away, you dump it, and the front wheel's lifting when it smashes the rock, and you jump that little gap. You know, like, you're not just plowing it into stuff. And if you are, you're probably crashing, you know, but you're also doing that at, like, well under, you know, let's call it dirt bike first gear speeds. You know, it's all pretty low speed stuff.
Yeah. So. Yep.
All right. We talked about the podium. Let's keep it up with forks. Sid SL got an update.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to say that I don't care, but I'm glad there's progress, but I kind of don't care. Do you care? It doesn't seem like anybody buys that fork anymore.
Well, I think that it makes sense for a handful of reasons. One, and I'm sure that this will change in time, but my understanding is Europe buys way more hardtails than we do. So I think that there is a place for it. It might not just be a big factor for the American market.
Hey, you know? Real quick, why is Europe so weird? They're just like all e-bikes and but then hardtails? What's going on,
and
man?
And then those cross body like leather satchel bag things that everyone has.
Yeah, yeah. And then they like diesel. It's just weird.
It rips.
It's weird, right?
I don't know.
Anyway, nothing. No big deal. I'm just calling out all of Europe.
I mean, yeah, whatever. That's fine. You can make fun of Europe. So I think this is a product that maybe doesn't make sense for us. But also, I remember the market isn't made for us. Like, when you want to do a Leadville, you want to do a 24-hour race in the South, you want to do a stage race in another country, this, you know, Sid SL for your hardtail with flight attendant may be the cat's meow.
I get it. You know, it's the like, lightest thing out there-ish. But, man, for the every person, even on a racy bike, like 100 grand penalty or whatever it is, gets you a fork that performs so much better.
Yeah, but let's go back to Memphis times, Kenny. I am in Memphis. I'm trying to think of what hardtail I would own.
Even in Memphis, though, we were big advocates of the 34. Before they even had the StepCast, we were telling people how awesome those things were.
Right, but we also were set, like, no, let's hear me out. I want to build the lightest hardtail single speed for Memphis.
Sure.
I'm buying a Sid SL with flight attendant.
No, I get it.
The flight attendant's heavier.
I get it.
But, you know, because I think I would love to see the numbers on a stiffness between a 120-34 and a 120-34 from 2015 versus a 110 Sid from 2025. Like, you know, everything's gotten better. The 32s have gotten better.
Sure.
So is the 32 as good as a 10-year-old 34? Maybe.
So
was some of that, well, hold on. I'm still on a tear here. Is some of that, you know, I think the biggest thing that we liked about the 34 was it didn't bushing bind. But I don't think that a new Sid is going to bushing bind like an old Reba.
I think you're probably right. Speaking of Reba, I think the more exciting thing about this announcement is the new budget price Reba, to be honest.
The Reba 35?
I thought maybe it was a 32. Maybe I misread that.
No. The new Reba features an air spring inspired by Sid, an XC-tuned isolator damper, and a sleek 35 chassis.
There you go.
And the fanciest one cost $549.
There you go. That's the everyman fork right there.
So, yeah. There you go. I mean, I think I would be very interested in trying the new Reba. I mean, I know Kenny's like, I want to try the podium.
So I'll tell you what, you go get a Reba. I think I'm going to get a podium. I am still a small bump princess. Mm-hmm. So I think the small bump compliance on that podium might be out of control.
Ooh, but did you not read what they said? The bushing placement in the new podium is better deeper in the travel, not necessarily. I don't know how their small bump is going
to
go.
Yeah, I really just need to like put my hands on one. I can probably parking lot tell if it's going to be good or bad. It's interesting they chose not to do floating bushings on it, though, like moto style. Mm. They mentioned why they didn't do that. I did read that. I just can't remember the details on why. Just like everything, of course, they're going to skew whatever they're saying for their own purposes because the marketing department gets a hold of it. But they basically said that in this application, floating bushings were not a good idea. So, but yeah, I'd take all that with a grain of salt. And maybe with that amount of travel, like we're not talking moto travel here. This is a 170 fork, 160, 170. I think there's some OE version that's less travel or something like that. Yeah. Also, another interesting tidbit is there's only four SKUs you can buy. There's a 160 and a 170, but each one of those you can get in a 58 head tube and a 68 head tube. And that just has to do with the diameter of the crown where it mates to your frame. It is not functional. Oh. It is purely aesthetic.
Right. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, they have like a different crown diameter, so it matches up with your chonky e-bike.
Right. It's kind of a bummer to me that they even have to make two SKUs, two separate families of these things because of that one thing. I am a huge advocate. I'm sure people have gathered this over the years. SKU reduction is good for everybody.
It really is. I mean, I almost had an aneurysm when the new brake pads for the new Shimano brake showed up. I'm just like, I don't know where to put these.
Yeah, you should see it. The Shimano wall versus the SRAM wall on brake pads. This Shimano one is twice as big.
Well,
and the SRAM one's also bigger than I want it to be. Let's be real here. But the Shimano one puts it to shame.
Yeah, and also like our service department is 600 square feet.
Yeah, we have 600 square feet dedicated to brake pads.
I know.
It's out of control. Just between SRAM and Shimano, and then you throw MTX in there, it's wild.
That's why we just can't stock. Like, if you have a SRAM brake, you get a SRAM pad. Sorry. Don't. And, like, I've even said that to people. They're like, you should have. And I'm like, and I just, like, gesture around the shop. And I'm like, where? Like, where should I put this? You know? So, like, the surfboards are on top of the bathroom. Like, they don't take up room that other stuff could be. Like, you have to use a stool to talk about a surfboard.
You remember all the kayaks and canoes and shit that were at Outdoors Inc.? They were, like, sitting up on some weird... Did we have fitting rooms in the Cordova location or something like that that they were all sitting on top of? I can't remember. They were on a roof of some kind that you could kind of get
Cordova,
to.
In Cordova, you walked in... And there was the rock, the climbing wall.
Yeah.
And behind
But what was behind
wall,
that? Was it like there was a little baby, a pony roof or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah. But behind the climbing wall, there was like a little room that had some storage stuff, I think. And then the fitting room backed up behind that. And then kayaks were all above it.
I remember a little bit of it was almost like a porch or something. It was basically it just had a pillar. It wasn't like a full wall, and it was like an open...
Like a gondola.
Yeah, there you go. What do they call it? A pergola? I don't know.
Pergola. Yeah, gondola is what you ride in.
Yeah, a pergola-style mezzanine. There we go.
But the fitting rooms were behind the cash registers, which were in that assembly.
All right. That sounds familiar. That place is gone. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Whatever.
They mismanaged some shit.
Wait, Outdoors totally is gone or just that location?
No, Cordova's gone. And I think Union's gone now too. Pretty sure. I think it's just Poplar. I think it's like Poplar in the warehouse. I haven't talked to those folks in a while. I should probably give them a call.
I haven't either. I'm on their website right now.
And for those that don't know, we all used to work at Outdoors Inc. in Memphis.
Mm-hmm. Poplar is the only location. That is correct.
That's wild. Yeah, I saw the writing on the wall when I was there. I mean, it was fun. It was definitely it was a learning experience, and I enjoyed all the people I worked with and all the stuff I was able to do. But yeah, I just saw that not going in the direction that I wanted to go. So I'm glad that I jumped when I jumped. I'm pretty confident that if I stayed there, it would have lasted a lot longer. But so it goes.
Wonder if they ever renovated that. I'm going on Google Maps right now. I'm trying to look at and see. Oh, it's still like that little house thing, man, on Poplar.
All right. So that was a fun tangent. We talked about some forks. Any other new stuff that's on your radar?
Well, there's one. So Fun, F-U-N-N, released a new... This is some Eurobike randoms.
Is that pronounced Foon?
I don't know. I've always called it Fun. I mean, whatever. I'm an American. Paneer. Fun, Foon, who gives a shit, Fazua, Fazua, I don't know, man. I can barely speak my own name, so. But they have a new riser bar out that is a 75 millimeter rise, and it retails for $62. So that's pretty cool.
I told you guys this was coming. Insano high rise bars, 150 cranks.
They offer shorter ones, but I don't know. It's I'm sorry. The 75 mil rise is 65, not 62. But yeah, they do it in a number of sizes, and I think that's pretty cool. I think that a lot of brands totally miss the boat on what they should do, meaning they build something with, you know, like a Surly. Every Surly head tube could just be like 2 inches longer. Like, just quit fucking around and make bikes for the people that ride them, you know? And the, like, every Roubaix is coming with a riser bar. Like, dude, just go on and make that bike taller.
Isn't that weird, right? I mean, I've been saying that for years, and I know I'm a little bit on the weird spectrum. A, I just like higher rise bars, but B, with my just dimensions, I kind of have to. I've always wanted bigger head tubes, and I get it. If you're really small, it can be extremely challenging to get bars low enough, but they got some specialty stems and this and that. I don't know.
No, hang tight, Kenny. When you look at bicycles, let's see. We're talking about the Roubaix.
Like, for example, your average trail bike, how many people do you see riding around on a relatively a one or two generation old, current generation or one generation old trail bike by any manufacturer? How many people do you see rolling around on one of those things, even on a size small, with a slam stem? The only time I ever see it is when someone bought the wrong fucking fork on eBay.
Well, but where I'm going, you're talking about longer head tubes, but I think that I'm trying to find any geometry chart. So you said trail bike, so I'm pulling up the Stumpy. My God, just show me the fucking geometry chart.
And so a Stump Jumper from the factory, if you're curious, comes with 20 mils of spacer under a stem in pretty much all sizes. It's 4 or 5 mil spacers from the factory. And I have basically, even then, I have never seen somebody lower that. I've only seen people say, hey, can I put this up higher?
Well, I want to look at it from this perspective, because an S1 has a 611 stack, 400 millimeter reach. An S6, which got a 525 reach, so it got 125 millimeters longer, or for Americans, roughly 5 inches. It got 71 millimeters taller in stack, so not quite 3 inches. Do you think an S1 and an S6 rider have more than 3 inch difference in their saddle height? If the answer is yes, which it should be, then what Kenny is advocating for, I think, is more a thing of bicycles do not grow proportionately as they get bigger.
Yep, 100%.
Like, I'm not saying that that S6 with a 671 stack is too tall. I'm not necessarily saying this is too low. But I am saying the 611 on the S1 is more correct. You know, that's going to get that person generally where they need to be.
And we have so much to work with now, right? We have, let's think about this. Even on an S1, S2 bike, it's got 4 5 mil spacers under the stem. It's got a riser stem and a 20 or 30 mil riser bar from the factory. That's a whole shitload of rise. Just put a damn bigger head tube in the thing. And worst case is, if someone really wants that thing lower, they can go out and purchase a flat bar and flip the stem upside down. Problem solved.
Well, I think the 411 with a riser bar is cool, because you can easily slap a riser bar in there and lose almost an inch, right?
Sure.
But that person that's riding the S, you know, they're already getting a 20 mil rise. You know, they have the same riser bar. So what do they do? Buy a 75 millimeter rise bar, and they've only gained another 2 inches. So now their bars are 5 inches higher than the S1, but their seat is probably more than 5 inches higher.
Yeah, 100%. So here we go. I mean, taller head tubes.
Going from me to Andrea, she's like 5'6", and I'm 6'2". She's a little under 5'6", and I'm 6'2". I think our seat heights are 4 inches different, and I don't have long legs. I have fairly short legs for someone my height. Like, Troy's saddle is higher than mine. Derek's saddle, Andy's saddle, Doug's, Derek's, Jason's. I'm just going through people that I'm roughly the same size of that I've worked with. Or
I think we've been over this. What's your saddle height? 80? Or is it like in the upper 70s?
Well, how do you measure it?
Center of the... I know it doesn't take crank length into account, but center of BB to top of saddle.
So probably like 77.
Okay. And for reference, I'm 73 to 73 and a half.
And you are 5'10"?
Ish.
Okay.
Depends on who I'm talking to. Depends on if I'm on Tinder. I'm 6 foot on Tinder. I'm 5'10 in real life.
Well, because I measure my seat height a little differently. I measure from the center of the BB to the wide part of the saddle. So, yeah.
But that's the thing. So our saddle heights, for example, are, you know, we'll call it 4 centimeters difference.
Inch and a half, let's say.
Yeah. And you're way taller than me by more than an inch and a half. Now, obviously, when you get taller, it's not just all leg. I get it. But yeah. Again, we're talking about proportions. The moral of the story is, please, manufacturers, build taller head tubes, especially in bikes. Like your Tarmacs, great. Your hardtail cross-country mountain bike, okay, great. Even your XC full suspension, if you want to keep a shorter one on that, okay, fine. But your freaking trail bikes and a Roubaix, come on, what the fuck are you doing? Like, stop it.
Yeah.
Everything's going to get better, too. It's going to be... Your headset's going to have fewer issues. You're taking huge hits on a mountain bike. If you can space those bearings further apart, they're not going to get stressed as much.
And reduce the amount of leverage vertically from the grip to the top of the bearing.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to put less stress on my top bearing, and also bearings to each other are not going to be leveraged as much. And I'm less likely to kapink the top of my freaking steer tube off of my fork, although that pretty much never happens. I've only seen that once back in Memphis.
Well, once in Memphis, I saw where someone with an external headset, they were running like a gajillion spacers, and they sheared the headset cup off of the insert. This is on a road bike. And then, did I tell the story about the ripped off handlebars?
I don't know.
So, guy had his bike on his rear rack. He was trying to back into a parking spot at the Airbnb, and someone was like, hey, you're like kind of in the fence. So he dropped into drive and pulled away. And apparently there was not enough, like it, he was just like, and you know, just like your backing up is going bad. It's not like you're mad, but you're just like, okay, let me move up 8 feet and try again. You know, you just drop it and drive and you move forward, right? His bars snagged in the chain link fence and he twisted his steer tube into.
Nice.
So, like, to get his fork out of the frame, it had twisted and deformed so much that I could not drive the fork through the top of the headset. I had to use an angle grinder and cut the steer tube off. I mean, I could have used the hacksaw, but I don't. Power tools are amazing. So I used a grinder and cut the steer tube off below the headset cap, or, you know, the bearing cover. I was able to, like, get that up,
sure,
get like an inch of clearance in there, and I cut it off and gave him his bike back. So
all right, so how did we get on that tangent about head tube length?
Because we're talking about tall bars.
Ah, yes.
And you're saying tall bars are amazing.
I'm all about tall bars. And I'm gonna get one of those 1UP 50s, by the way.
1UP 50 mil riser bar,
50 mil rise, 1UP floppy bar.
Oh, cool. I can't stand the way those bars look, so I won't get one.
Yeah, I like to touch mine because it feels weird because it's not round. Is that too much information?
I'm just not going to touch that one.
Are we going to do any more news, or should we do questions? We've been recording for an hour or 10.
Yeah, well, you know, we're not going to do any listener questions, and Andrea is going to insert patrons because I don't have any of that pulled up, and I'm using my computer, so none of it's bookmarked. She is normally the commander-in-chief of the flow of things. So sorry if you had a burning listener question, tough shit. And then also,
well, it's not like we're never gonna answer it, we just might answer it later
or just not.
Come on,
we'll get to it at some point. Yeah, anything else you want to talk about?
Nope, shut it down.
All right, well, Kenny said it. We're going to shut it down. We are done recording. If you have anything you really want us to do, yeah, let us know. But otherwise, thanks for listening. And listener patron stuff will be inserted like here.
So our patrons starting at $10 a month. You have Zozo, Tom P. Ornstar, Tom's P. Timothy, the patron known as Aaron _, Ty, Tennessee Zach, Taylor Zwift, Taper Boar Pro, Skunk in Your Trap, Samuel, Ryan, Ride Time Extended,
Pork Chop Sandwiches,
Noah, My Pal Dal, MTV Shenanigans,
Mike Jones,
Ligma, Viva, Leland, Josh, Josh, Jim the Fucked Up Truck Guy, JC, Jared, Jake D, Holden, Two Dicks, Green Giant, Gordon, Frank the Tank, Fart Noises, Eric, Chunk Norris, Captain Fickle, Cam Irish One, Bill, Bearded Bag O' Dicks, Barrel of Dicks, Angry JRA Forever, AJ, Aaron, A Very Prominent Stud Horse, _, at $11.11 per month, we've got Mustard on the Beat, Ho, Patamelon Disco at 14 Australian, Dean at 1650 Australian, and at $20 a month, we've got Scott, Poop Wrench, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Brian, $26.06 per month, Alice's Goose Nuggets and Meat Rice Emporium, Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors, we kudos our own rides at Viddy.
So now we, anything else, Kenny?
Nope, that's it.
All right, well, we'll shut her down. Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along Show.
There's some shit coming out of your pads.